Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 121st installment of Super Podcast. I am your host, Super Marcy, and the gang is all here. And I'm referring to the terrible Australian Bede and the lovely Australian Bee. Hello to both of you.
Oh, but I want to be a lovely
You're
Australian. That's
terrible.
the
That's all
Well,
there
you're
is to
not.
it. You're
That's
terrible. Deal with
unfair.
it. You're terrible, Muriel.
Can I just be the lovely, terrible Australian?
You can't be both. You have to be
No.
one.
And you're terrible. That's all there is to it.
Fine.
yes. The
Suck it
gang
up,
is
princess.
back together and nothing changes. At all. It has been several months between podcasts. We've probably, what have we done? Bede has done some video reviews and I've done some audio reviews, and B has also done those with me. And people may have noticed the site hasn't, well, I haven't been as active on the site because I had the flu. And I've been suffering really badly from chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia and all these other stupid things that my body is afflicted with. So hopefully I can get back into the swing of things and we can have podcasts more often. So yeah, we had some stuff planned. We're going to talk about all the like summer movies, but that didn't happen. But we have come together for a good cause, well, kind of. One of, I guess he would be, we could say he was one of our favorite actors, and that is Robin Williams, passed away last week, and it's left pretty much the whole world in shock. And even speaking now, we're all still coming to grips with it because, A, he was just such a big part of all of our lives with the films he did, his stand up, and just, everything about him just seemed to have some kind of impact. Just for me personally, just going through life, but also the fact that he did take his own life, and that can be very shocking and confronting for a lot of people, especially if you didn't really know that he was suffering depression and he previously had, long-term like addictions, and he sort of relapsed recently. So it's kind of been really, really shocking for a lot of people, and it's been hard for some people to deal with it. So it has been a very strange week or so since it happened, and it does hit someone like me personally because I suffer depression, and seeing a lot of people post about it, it was weird because people don't often post about it. But as I stated, I don't think you should take a tragedy like this for people to start talking about it. You should always be talking about it, and you should always be supporting your friends, because if they're not upfront about it, you don't know if somebody might be suffering. But just giving someone a nice compliment or just some encouragement might actually help them get through the day. So I always think you should be good to your friends and family because you never know what they might be going through. And yeah, that's my big long speech. Let me take a breath. Are you still with me, guys?
Of course.
Sure are.
Okay, you're listening. So with that said, we would like to pay tribute to Robin Williams. So this is just probably going to be very random as we discuss, I guess, what he meant to us, the films and stuff that we loved the best from him. So I might just hand it off to Bede. If he wants to kick it off, maybe talk about a performance or a movie, or something about Robin Williams.
Alrighty, well, I think we should easily start off, well, at least for me, a particular, because Robin Hood, I realized sort of thinking about this the other day that Robin Williams was a big staple of my childhood. I realize, just looking back on a lot of the films that I used to watch as a kid, he was a big part of in many ways, whether they be animation or live action. And the first one I want to talk about is Aladdin, which was the, of course, the 1992 Disney animated film in which he played the role of Genie.
Yes, and I actually did rewatch this, I think it was Friday or Saturday, I don't remember, I rewatched it with Lily, and it's been hard for me to actually watch anything with him, but I managed to get through Aladdin and I did tear up a bit, but that, I think, especially like in our kind of age bracket, Aladdin was such a big movie and it was really different from, you know, stuff that Disney had been putting out. It was different than The Little Mermaid, it was different than Beauty and the Beast. You had like a male-centered character. And it was kind of, I think it's one of the first animated movies of that time to sort of have a big celebrity voice to a character, and he was larger than life in it.
Yeah. And it sort of came out at the height of the sort of when the Disney Renaissance as well, because it was sort of in between both Beauty and the Beast and as well as The Lion King. And it was huge when it came out. It was like a huge box office hit, and it won a bunch of Oscars. And, of course, I think it was really one of the first animated films at the time where a lot of people were actually campaigning for Robin Williams to even get an Oscar nomination just for his work as Genie in the film.
Because it's just such an entertaining voice performance, and they kind of, I don't know if this is true, but the animation style of, like, the Genie kind of looked like him as well.
I could see that, yeah.
I especially noticed this on the last watch. And he was kind of a character that we hadn't really seen a lot of. He was, you know, spewing out all sorts of references, and that kind of stuff is really common now.
I was going to say, it was also the character kind of like was the first of sort of a range of characters we would see in a lot of in kids' films, whether they be live action or animated, where they would try to have a character in those films that was kind of similar to Genie, you know, who was fast-talking, spouted pop culture references and all that, but it wasn't quite as good as what Robin Williams did in Aladdin, because he sort of made it his own. And
yeah, he actually like really started a trend with it.
Yeah, yeah.
B, do you have any input on Aladdin?
Nothing that hasn't already been said, but as what Bede stated before, I think the reason why you, Bede, and myself took, you know, William's death in particular quite hard is because he was always a part of our lives. Up until very recently, we couldn't have a life without Robin Williams. He was always a part of, he was a part of our growing up. He was a part of our sphere of entertainment. But, yeah, in Aladdin, that was basically my very first exposure to Robin Williams. That's how I got to know the name. And, you know, every time I'd see him afterward, I'd hear his voice and I think, oh, my God, it's Genie. So, yeah, in terms of exposure, Robin Williams as the Genie definitely has that impact on me, and it had never left me ever since.
I think it's one of those roles in one of those movies that resonates a lot. And if you noticed, a lot of people were posting in tribute to Robin Williams pictures of the Genie. So I think it's definitely something that resonated with a lot of people. I was going to say, B, do you want to bring up something that you want to discuss?
I want to sort of talk about another film on the sort of opposite end of the spectrum of Robin Williams' roles. Like, even though he was an amazing comedic actor, and there's no denying that, because he was, if not one of the best comedic actors of all time, but I always thought he was very underrated as a dramatic actor as well. And I think one of my personal favorite, and he's done a lot of great dramatic performances, but I think one of my personal favorite ones from him is actually a role that we'd never actually seen him do before until this film, and that was One Hour Photo.
Mm, yeah.
Which was a psychological thriller that came out in 2002. In which he plays this character who works in a photo shop, and he has interests in the lives of those he sort of develops pictures for, and then eventually he becomes fixated on this one family in particular because he sees them as like the perfect family. But then when he sort of starts to get himself involved in their lives, he realized that they're not as perfect as he thought they were.
Mm.
It's an interesting film in a lot of ways because it's brilliantly well done by Mark Romerick, who is, of course, he is a music video director, and he's best known as doing, I believe, he was the music video for Closer by Nine Inch Nails, if that's correct.
I couldn't tell you.
Oh, but he's a major music video director, and he just did a really fantastic and really well put together sort of psychological thriller, but also worked as a character study. Mm. And also, and just seeing Robin in that role like I said before, in a role that we've never seen him before, and also pulling it off superbly.
Yeah, it was very creepy, and I think it really surprised a lot of people, especially those that had never really seen him in anything that wasn't a comedy role as well.
And it's funny, though, because this film also came out, he would do kind of two kind of creepy characters back-to-back, because he also did the remake of Insomnia, in which he played a serial killer.
Ah, yes. Very good movie.
Yeah, he was also fantastic in that. It was kind of interesting sort of him doing not once but twice playing these really two creepy roles and doing them just brilliantly.
I found with Robin Williams in One Hour Photo is that he came across as more there was no doubt in your mind that he was mentally unstable, but his character Sid in One Hour Photo was more of a pathetic, tragic figure. Meanwhile, his character in Insomnia was he was evil. He very cold, very calculating. He was a predator. But when you sort of contrast those two roles, I find no matter how diametrically different they are, they still complement Williams's talent. It gives him the opportunity to shine and to, you know, show you that there's so much darkness within this soul that you usually associate with laughter with. That's what I really liked about his dramatic work in particular, is that he could surprise you every time.
Mm. Absolutely. I did say B, not bead before.
Oh, sorry.
but that's okay because you brought up two really awesome films. But I was I wanted to ask B if there was anything in particular she wanted to mention.
Sorry. It's a bit hard when both our names.
I know your name sounds so similar, so I'll just say terrible and lovely or something from now on.
He can be bead. I can be Trix.
Trixie.
I'll let B have two goes since I actually
took it. Oh, Bede. You're so nice. but yeah, well, going off that, obviously Insomnia, that is one of my favourite of his more dramatic, dark and gritty roles. Additionally, his performance in Death to Smoochie is one of those roles that basically is a sucker punch out of nowhere. I mean, you've seen him do all this other stuff, but even so, watching him as the character of Rainbow, he was out of control. He was so desperate. There was nothing that he wouldn't do in order to be successful, and once again, Williams just pulled it out of a hat by the ears and waved it over his head and tossed it into the audience. You know?
Yeah, it's such a dark movie, but it's so hilarious.
Oh, yes.
Like, I think there's, I haven't seen this for a while, and it's actually something I really want to rewatch now. Doesn't he, like, make penis cookies that Smoochie uses on the kids' yeah. show?
The cock cookies.
I'm just thinking about that. I think he's, like, trying to say, it's a rocket ship.
Just when you thought you had seen it all, cock cookies.
So much good in that movie, and, you know, he's brilliant, Edward Norton's brilliant, everyone's movie's just awesome.
Hmm.
It's, ugh. Such a good one. And it's interesting when he does go in, like, that weird dark comedy place because he's so good at it.
I think the reason why he's so successful with that sort of genre is that he plays it completely straight.
Mm.
He doesn't sort of wink, wink, nudge, nudge at the audience. You know, he's playing, in his mind, he's playing a proper person living their life.
Mm.
It just doesn't occur to them that they're doing really shitty things.
Absolutely. Did you want to mention another one before we go to me?
Well, of course, Mrs. Doubtfire. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't Aladdin, it was Mrs. Doubtfire that really did, that really sort of introduced you to Williams's very manic, hilarious, masterful, comedic drive.
There's also a lot of drama in it as well. And
oh, yeah. I think that film has a really good balance between the comedy as well as the tragedy.
Yeah, it doesn't really... It's not a cliched movie, so to speak. And I think that's quite surprising. It's very different.
And and it ends on a very sort of bittersweet note. Mm. Not everybody gets what they want. But, you know, the film generally says you may not get everything that you ask for, but you got to make do with what you have and treasure all the good things that you remember.
Mm. And he, I mean, they really did great with the makeup, but you could still tell it was him.
Oh, as well as the voice that he put on for Mrs. Doubtfire. Oh, dear.
It's such a fun movie. I can't even say how many times I've seen it over the years.
Hmm.
It's just so entertaining.
It's one of those movies that you can watch over and over again and probably not get tired of because it's just so filled with great stuff. Great performances from everybody else. If any of you have read Mara Wilson's blog, she writes about an experience she had on the set with Robin Williams when she was a little one. And just reading about that again kind of, like, brings tears as well as a smile to my eye.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they actually, like, the kid actors at the time, they all had a really great chemistry with him well. So that they really makes it very sweet. And you can understand why he's going through all that trouble to, you know, spend time with them.
Yeah. It's very sweet.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much you can say about that movie. But I just want to take a moment and kind of talk about my experience. Like, it's hard to remember, like, when I may have first really took notice of Robin Williams. It could have been seeing Mork and Mindy on TV. And, you know... later on in life, you know, during the 90s, he was, like, the actor that we would always, like, my dad would take me and one of my best friends at the time to go see all his movies. Like, we'd see, like, Jumanji and Jack, Father's Day, Flubber, Patch Adams, things like that. So it has, like, a lot of memories for me with my dad because he was, like, you know, our favorite actor, but also with one of my friends who we'd always say he was like our favorite actor. And we even mentioned that last week when things happened. So there's a lot of memories tied to his movies, but I think the first one and probably I would say is my favorite Robin Williams movie and performance just because it means so much to me, would be Hook. And I know people kind of don't like this movie. Other people like me just love it. It came out when I was like maybe 6 or 7. I don't really remember. And I'm pretty sure, like, we borrowed the video. And I watched it, like, 3 times in 24 hours. This is the best thing ever. Because I really loved the idea of, like, Peter Pan growing up. But what if he went back to Neverland? And I just... It's a fun movie. He's really good at his character development in it because he changes a lot. And he's not always in, like, absolute hilarious mode. He plays it really well. And everyone else around him is really, really good. Like Dustin Hoffman and Bob Hoskins, may he rest in peace also. You've got Maggie Smith. There's lots of weird, bizarre, like, cameos in this movie, and you've got the Lost Boys, and of course my favorite, Dante Basco. And it's just, it's an interesting Steven Spielberg movie, but it's an interesting take on the story of Peter Pan. And, you know, at that age, it's so, like, magical and everything, and I was just obsessed with it. I think my mum, like, banned me from renting it out. But, you know, as I got older, I'd sit down with my dad and we'd watch it and still have fun with it. And that's probably the one that just means the most to me. And it's going to be really hard trying to rewatch it now. I will eventually. I'll get there. But it's just one that really... It really meant a lot to me personally, and it still does. It would be down on one of my, like, all-time favourite movies.
You know what?
Yes.
I was just going to say that the Skype just bugged out, sorry. But, yeah, you know what? I do agree with you. Like, I don't see why so many people do not like Hook. It's a fun, frivolous movie, and it's still got some really good... got some really good character moments. So personally, I don't see why it gets so much censure from, you know, the critics and all that. It's like, guys, if you think this is the worst movie you've seen, you haven't seen that very many.
Yeah. it's really fun. I think, I don't want to be, like, nasty about it. I just really think Julia Roberts was miscast, but I still think she does a decent job of playing Tinkerbell. But they really changed the character of Tinkerbell. She's not what she's supposed to be, but that's what happens when you cast, like, America's Sweetheart at that time in that sort of role.
We also need to remember that Robin Williams is one of those very few actors who can also, like, channel the child in all of us as well.
No, absolutely.
That's why, because his character, of course, like you say, has a great arc in the film, because it's pretty much Peter Pan trying to rediscover what it was like to be a child again. And Williams was able to capture that in the film.
Yeah, and it's also about him connecting to his own children as well. Oops, there goes my phone. So, yeah, it's a wonderful movie. But that being said, like, he sort of did tap into being a kid with Jack because he was essentially playing a 10-year-old boy. Who has a Hollywood disease of aging so fast that when he's 10, he looks like, you know, a 45-year-old man. Yep. Now, a disease like that does exist. They don't age like that.
Not so dramatically.
No. And strangely enough, like, I'd never realized this till I was older. It's a bloody Francis Ford Coppola movie. What the hell? That's bizarre.
He needed money at the time, Marcy.
He was young and he needed the money, damn it.
It's really weird to think that he directed this movie because it's not, like, his kind of thing.
And it has, like, an interesting cast as well. Besides Robert Williams, you got, like, Jennifer Lopez, Bill Cosby, Fran Drescher, Diane Lane, and a whole bunch of other people in it as well. It's just it's an interesting cast. He put together for this movie, but it's definitely, like, it's definitely Robin Williams that makes that movie. I mean, regardless whether you like it or don't like it, he's definitely the thing that makes that movie.
It's a very kind of sappy movie, but on some level it's still, you know, enjoyable.
Yeah.
yeah, we'll go back to Bede for another pick from you.
Of course. Another one I want to talk about is a film. I think when this movie came out, it's another dramatic performance of his, but I think this was at the time when it came out, it was like, I think everyone was sort of, was like stunned that, you know, Robin Williams into drama, like, you know, people were surprised by that the first time they saw this movie. And that, of course, is Dead Poets Society. Which is a film, it's pretty much like, you know, your standard sort of like inspirational teacher movie, but it's definitely one of the best ones within the genre, and probably like a lot of other films of its type that came out afterwards that tried to emulate. But, and of course, with Robin Williams as the teacher, John Keating, and he's sort of, you know, trying to inspire these young boys in his class to, you know, better themselves and to, you know, as he says multiple times during the film, you know, carpe diem, seize the day, you know.
He even started a movie called Seize the Day.
Exactly. Strangely, and that was a few years before.
Yeah. And also the famous, Oh, Captain, My Captain.
Yes.
And if you really did that in a classroom, you'd probably get detention for a week.
Yeah, unless the person who sends you off to detention is a cold-hearted person, then yes.
Yeah, and
but it's one of those movies where you kind of wish, like, when you went to school and all that, you had a teacher like Robin Williams' character, you know, somebody who would inspire you in that way to, like, go out and, you know, and do make the most of your life and do whatever it takes to fulfill your dreams.
Yeah, but it's also got like a really, really sad element to it, and it's hard to talk about because of how Robin passed away. But the film does deal with teenage suicide over a lot of pressure. And you know, it's hard for anyone to watch this movie and not cry, and I'm almost tearing up just talking about it. It's something I don't watch this a lot because it is a really like emotional movie, and it always really gets to me as well.
And it was directed by Australian director Peter Weir
Indeed. Absolutely. Yeah.
I like the emphasis really like just to make sure we know exactly.
Exactly. another mention from you.
I was just going to say, recently I had seen a film with Robin Williams in it, back from 2009, World's Greatest Dad.
See, I haven't seen this, but I really want to, and I really do love Bobcat. I mean, I have met him and stuff, just saying.
It's one of those, once again, it's one of those dark comedy / tragedy films, but again, Robin Williams plays it completely down the middle. He doesn't exaggerate his actions or anything like that. It's like it's such a sharp, venomous satire.
And that's what Bobcat does.
That is what he is all about.
And that's why we love him as a director.
And just the way he takes this admittedly very dark subject matter and spins it, like, in his own unique way, with Williams, you know, his ever-loving companion by his side. And just the way the film plays out, half the time you're laughing and half the time you're gawking at what's being said and what's being done, and you're thinking, my God, you know, it's amazing how far somebody will go when they are desperate. Again, Williams is so good at playing these dark, desperate characters, but always gives them humanity and a sense of, you know, relatability. It is a really good performance from him, and I just hope that more people get to see this movie and see him in it and see more of his wonderful, you know, versatility as an actor.
Yeah, I definitely am going to see this. It's just one that I never really got around to. And, you know, just on paper, they seem like a good fit of actor and director. So it is on Netflix, so I will have to watch it. One I do have to mention is Awakenings, which paired Robin with Robert De Niro, two of my absolute favourite actors. And I remember getting this on VHS. My dad was telling me about it. He said, you know, Robin Williams and Robert De Niro were in a movie together. And I'm like, what? It's like, it's so good. We have to go get it. We'll go find it at the video shop. I think we had to search like a couple of stores to actually get it. But watching it, I think I can't remember how old I was. I was maybe like 10 or 11. But I remember just crying and just being so moved by it. So moved by their performances and, the stories. And it's just, it's something I haven't seen for quite a long time, but it still really just had a big impact on me. And it really has to do with those two. And there really was some kind of connection between them in their roles, especially with De Niro being somebody that's catatonic, and then with this new drug, he sort of comes out of it. And it's something I've wanted to revisit recently, but I found it difficult just because of how emotional I get with it. It's one of those movies that I'd put on my list of just movies that I'll cry to every single time, along with like Dead Poets Society. So I don't know if anyone wants to say anything on it, or if Bede wants to mention something else.
No, I agree with everything you say. It's a fantastic film, and it's definitely a tearjerker, but definitely one of the good kinds. And and both Robin Williams and Robert De Niro were amazing in that film.
Yeah, it's really touching in a lot of ways. I'm almost like getting teary just thinking about the movie again. I'm emotional, all right?
No, it's all right.
Bede.
Yes.
Something else you would like to mention?
I want to talk about another film, and in my opinion, this is one of the best films that Robin Williams has appeared in. And I watched it for the first time like a few years ago, and it was one of those films I've been wanting to see forever, but I never got the opportunity to until at that time, and that was The Fisher King. Which, because in the film, Robin Williams, he stars alongside Jeff Bridges, and Jeff Bridges plays like a radio DJ who after sort of something happens on his show, he sort of becomes lost and all that, and then he runs into this homeless person played by Robin Williams, and they struck up a friendship, and Robin Williams is sort of like has a mental disorder, and from what I remember, because it has been quite a while since I've seen it, that he wants to go on an adventure to find the Holy Grail. And it sort of follows their journey together. And, of course, they sort of get involved, both him and Jeff get involved of the lives of these two women, played by Mercedes Rule and also Amanda Plummer, who, of course, was Robin Williams' love interest in the film. And it's a fantastic film. It was directed by Terry Gilliam, so it has this sort of off-kilter weirdness and all that in it as well, but it also has a lot of heart, and it's very funny, and it's also very touching as well. And it's just a completely original film in so many ways, and it's brilliantly well written as well.
That it is,
and it's definitely one I think I don't think that many people have seen it. Like, it's very well known, but I think it's one out of these more well known films, I think more people should check
out. For more mainstream audiences, I think it's one that they kind of miss.
Yeah.
We'll put it that way.
Yes. I was just going to say that another of Williams's best films, to me, has to be The Birdcage.
You know what? I was watching that last night, but then my Netflix stuffed up. It's, you know what? I remember, like, thinking it was hilarious when it came out. But, like, watching it again, I was, like, wondering, is this going to be, like, offensive? Because I heard some people saying, man, this movie's offensive, but I really didn't think it was.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's bad.
I think people who say, oh, this is offensive, blah, 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 I think they're missing the point. Because the way I see it, the two gay characters, Armand Williams and Albert, played by Nathan Lane, like, I think they are two of the best characters in the movie. They have such great chemistry.
They do.
And the way they just, like, bounce their lines off each other. They have this really, really great relationship. And, yeah, it can be over the top and can be at times, but I feel that's the way it's intended to be.
Yeah.
And so that's once you get the actors...
Like how they portrayed... No, sorry. I'm talking over you.
Hello, you there?
Yes, I'm here. I was talking over you. I was just going to say they kind of portrayed, like, homosexual characters really over the top in the 90s.
Hmm.
So that kind of went with it, but it wasn't, like, too crazy.
Well, it was based off a stage performance, off a stage show. But as I was saying, I think the reason why it doesn't come off as offensive to me is that the two actors are playing it straight down the line.
Mm.
It's campy, but at the same time, it's not, like, in your face. You, because if it was in your face, then it would be insulting.
Mm.
So, yeah, The Birdcage is one of those films that I love re-watching again every time it comes on television. Like, I'll see, oh, hey, it's The Birdcage. And I'll sit down and I'll watch it all the way through and laugh every time. Guaranteed.
Yeah, it's one of those... It's one of those movies. I used to watch it a lot, like, when it came out, but I hadn't seen it for a long time, and I... got, like, halfway through last night before Netflix shut itself.
Of course.
Yeah, and we haven't actually spoken about Good Will Hunting, which he won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor.
I was going to bring that up at some point. I just
We can still save that because I wanted to bring up Jumanji. And seriously, when I think of this film, I think of the Simpsons episode when they're being chased by rhinos and Homer's like, I know what to do. Jumanji! Wait, that didn't work. That's what I think of when I think of Jumanji. But at the time, this was like the film. Everyone loved it. Everyone was obsessed with it. I kind of got tired of it as I got older. But, you know, if I sat down now and watched it, I would probably have a lot of fun.
I wanted that board game, Marcy. I wanted
want that board game? Like, I love board games. I played a lot of board games then. And I was like, I want something to do that. But it's a really, like, inventive and interesting idea. And they play it, like, really interestingly. And it's actually, like, you know, it is a really fun movie. Seeing this at the cinemas was, like, such an awesome experience. And for the time, like, the effects and stuff were really well done. And, yeah, I think, you know, I think it's definitely worth a rewatch now. I mean, it's almost, like, 20 years old, but it's, at the time, it was a hell of a lot of fun. And, again, Robin Williams was just really, really entertaining in it. I want to bring up another movie, and this one's kind of more under the radar. But it is perhaps maybe the strangest movie he's ever been in. And I don't think I quite understand it, no matter how many times I've actually watched it. Our movie is Toys. Now, I'm assuming you've both seen this weirdness.
Yeah, it's a pretty weird film.
It is so bizarre.
I saw it a very long time ago.
I remember watching it several times, like, really being interested in it, but I had no idea what was going on. I probably still would have no idea what's going on. It has an interesting cast. It's got, like, Robin Williams, Michael Gambon, Joan Cusack. It's got Robin Wright. LL Cool J is freaking in this movie as well. How bizarre.
And And he plays the son of Michael Gambon.
He does. But it's so weird. I don't understand it. But on a visual scale, it's so interesting and intriguing. But I just don't get it.
I think that's pretty much sums up all
movies. I have to bring that up because it's just one of the weirdest movies ever. Bead.
Alrighty. My next movie I wanted to talk about, and I think this is like when we talk about, quintessential Robin Williams performances. I think one of the first that come to my mind is definitely Good Morning Vietnam.
Good Morning Vietnam!
Of course!
This is just Robin Williams at the top of his game. And basically, the filmmakers were basically like, you know, we got these scenes where Robin Williams' character is a radio DJ. You know what? We're just going to put him in there and we're just going to let him loose. So that's what basically they did. They just let Robin Williams just loose and they just shot everything, and he pretty much improvised every single radio sort of scene in the entire film, and it's just hilarious. Like it is also a drama as well. There's a bit of dramatic elements to it as well, but at first most it is a comedy, and it's a very hilarious one, and Robin is just amazing in it. I mean, how the hell this guy can just, you know, come up with so much funny stuff at such rapid fire pace, I don't know. I probably would give out after like at least 20 seconds.
Yeah, that you would. Yes. This is another one that if I think about this movie, I think about my dad, because it's one that he really loved. He got me to watch it, and we'd watch it several times together. Robin Williams was like a connection that I have with my dad, because we would just watch his movies. He was like our actor. And this was another one of those ones where he's like, oh, you should watch this. It's a really good movie. Blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, okay. And it really took me by surprise. And, you know, the older that I got, the more I could really appreciate it. So, definitely another one that's very meaningful for me as well.
And it was the first film he did that it was his first, also earned his first Academy Award nomination for this film. And very well deserved, I might add.
Mm. Well, he did eventually win, so that was good.
Yeah. Yes.
I think I cried when he actually won for Good Will Hunting. It was that emotional.
I was going to put down, it may not necessarily be based solely on Williams's performance, because as a whole, I do really like the movie. It is the 1996 Kenneth Branagh directed version of Hamlet, and Williams played Osric. It's one of those films that has a fantastic ensemble, and everybody compliments each other. Didn't have much of a role in the grand scheme of things, but Williams made him memorable. He had a really good handle on the language and on the character, and just how luscious the film was. And everybody knows the story of Hamlet and how sort of, you know, how messed up it is. But
and Kenneth Branagh had to put everything in there, might add. How long is that movie? Like a billion hours?
168 minutes, I think.
I thought it was like 24 hours.
Well, either way, I am a big Shakespeare fan, so sue me. But overall, I felt the film was a fantastic interpretation of a classic play, and Williams was just part of this magnificent machine. So I think he did very well with a small character in comparison to, you know, Branagh and Kate Winslet and all those other people. So, yeah, it was a good role for him, and it didn't overwhelm the movie. It just, the film spoke for itself.
And I'm nodding. yeah. Something else that I want to talk about, and this just was a movie that I ended up just hiring randomly, because back during, like, the late 90s, early noughties, I basically would go to the video store, hire out like 10 movies and watch them in like 3 days. Because fuck doing schoolwork, apparently. No, I actually did get my schoolwork done, but I just watched so many movies. And one of the movies I think I picked up was Jacob the Liar. I knew nothing about it. I just knew it had Robin Williams in it. And it was actually like a quite a surprising and interesting movie because I didn't really know anything about it. And it takes place in, I think, 1944. And he plays a Jewish shopkeeper who I think gets messages out through a radio that they get in like when they get put into the ghetto during, you know, Nazi-occupied Poland. It's like a comedy drama. But it's an interesting and just really entertaining watch. Especially, like, not knowing anything about it and just really being caught off guard. And Williams, again, just plays such an interesting character. And it's, again, it's different than what he's done before. So I just felt like that one was worth mentioning. I don't know if you guys have actually seen that one.
I have seen it. It's been quite a while since I've seen it. I was kind of mixed on it, but Williams definitely was the best part of the film. I will say that.
Yeah, it was very, very different. And another one I quickly want to talk about, because I watched it a lot when it came out, was Father's Day, which teamed him up with Billy Crystal, where a woman they have both been involved with tells them that they are potentially the father of her teenage son who's gone missing and sends them off to find him. It might not be the greatest movie, but I found it really entertaining. I haven't seen it for a long time. But, yeah, back then I used to watch it a lot. I thought those two were really hilarious and they worked really well off each other. And it was just one that I would put on like a lazy day and I'd really enjoy watching it. So I do have like fond memories of that movie. So B once more.
Me or B?
B.
Okay.
Me?
Yes, you. Could it be then who?
I'm confused. I was going to say amongst all of the fantastic stand-up performances that Williams did, his appearance on Whose Line Is
yes,
It Anyway?
Yes.
Fantastic. I felt that episode was just so well-suited to Williams's, talents in terms of being the manic improvising comedian. I mean, just the way he just was able to fling out all these characterizations and do whatever just with some words or instructions given to him and just you're rolling on the floor laughing.
It's so funny.
Yeah, he's just completely bombastic. He is completely in his element. So it was just amazing of what happens in about half an hour time. For the show. It's just it's awesome. If you can check it out on YouTube, it should be on there.
Yeah.
Whose Line Is It Anyway, Robin Williams?
And I think I tape recorded it and I had watched it like so many times. So many times. There's still like a lot of movies we could talk about. And you know, there was some sort of that didn't really get well received, like Bicentennial Man. I wasn't really a big fan of it, but I thought he did well in it. Patch Adams, I loved when I first saw it, but as I've gotten older and watching it, it's not very good. He does a decent job. It doesn't come off as well now as it did then, especially if you know more about the real guy. And the real story. And another one that I just found like really, really upsetting. And I just didn't get like what people saw in the movie. I just didn't think things really worked, and it just was so sad. And that was what Dreams May Come.
Mm.
And I think even like now, it's probably even more depressing to think about.
Yeah. I think out of like Robin Williams has appeared in a lot of sort of tearjerkers over the years, but that's sort of like the sort of the big one, because that's a movie that deals with, because death is a huge part about that film.
Yeah,
and I like the movie. Like, sad. It's not perfect, and it is flawed in a lot of ways.
It's actually, but, like, visually, it's a really interesting movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just, it's so sad and so depressing. It's just, it's hard to watch.
Yeah, I think even light now of Robin's passing, it probably is even more so now. But I like the movie. Like I said, it's not perfect, but... But it did resonate with me on an emotional level as well. But I can definitely see why it sort of had a mixed reception over the years.
It's definitely a difficult one to get through. But I thought, you know, those are kind of worth mentioning as well. Any other ones you want to discuss before we kind of wrap this segment up?
Yep. I wanted to mention, because Bea sort of mentioned her... you know, Robin's appearance on Whose Line Is It Anyway, which is hilarious. But I also want to mention, like, his stand-up shows.
Mm.
Like, one in particular I watched a few years ago that was hilarious was the stand-up show Weapons of Self-Destruction.
Yes.
Which is absolutely hilarious from beginning to end. It's him just sort of going through so many different topics that were sort of big at the time. You know, family, drugs, political stuff, and just pretty much every topic at the time was discussed in this special, and it's just absolutely hilarious and very insightful as well. And of course, it has his trademark rapid fire humor, and it's hilarious. Like, if you haven't seen his stand up specials, definitely check him out, particularly Weapons of Self Destruction, because it was absolutely fantastic.
And the thing is, he really, while he might have been very, like, a very private person, with his stand up, he didn't really hesitate to talk about, like, you know, having a drug problem and stuff like that. And I think that was a big way of him coping. With what was going on in his life as well.
He does discuss that in his special, and he definitely, like you say, he usually is a private person, but he's not afraid to actually talk about some of this stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
Just adding off what Bede was just saying, I find comedy... The best comedy comes from the darkest of places, because you can either internalize it and, you know, keep it to yourself, or you can put a spin on it and express it, because life is just a very strange, odd thing to be a part of. Sometimes it makes sense. Most of the time it really doesn't.
Yeah.
So, but that, I think that's the greatest sort of, like, comedy of it all. We just don't know. Perhaps we weren't made to know.
Mm.
But the way Williams was able to turn all these misfortunes into something for us, you know, people he didn't know, to laugh at and make a career out of it. They say that being a clown is perhaps the most saddest and most loneliest of professions. And just when you think about it, comedy really is a tragedy, but it's masqueraded as something... you know, that we're not threatened with, and therefore we are able to accept. So, yeah, that's perhaps the best thing about Williams in terms of being the stand-up comedian he was.
I guess in closing for our tribute portion of the podcast, I mean, what can we say? I mean... thank you to Robin Williams for just being a part of our lives from, you know, very early on. And there's so many things, like, we haven't discussed, but we really do need to mention, like, Good Will Hunting, because he did win an Oscar for it, and that was pretty special. And again, another kind of dramatic role, but there was some humor to it. And he had some just amazing scenes with Matt Damon. And I think it was, he played a character that we all could really relate to and just, you know, really want to be around and see him helping, you know, such a troubled young man. So we can't, you know, not mention that one. I don't know if you want to add any, if either of you want to add anything else to that.
It's just an amazing film, and it probably is my favorite film that he has appeared in. And it has been quite a while since I've seen it, but I remember just him giving such a really heartfelt performance in that film. And, with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon just writing such a great script, they gave him such a great character to work with. And sort of like, and when we sort of get to know his character, we sort of see the layers, the film sort of peels off the layers to his character. As well, and also his relationship with Matt Damon's character is the heart of the film, and it's just a great performance, and he definitely deserved to win the Oscar for this film.
Absolutely, it's something I've watched a lot of times, and I do really want to watch it again at some point. And it's definitely one of my favorite just movies and performances too.
Yep.
And in closing, as I said, just thank you to Robin Williams. May he now be at peace, and our thoughts are with his family.
Yes.
During what, you know, will be a tough time for them. So, moving on, we'll wrap up the show and just discuss some things that we've seen or been watching recently. I'll just go first because it's easier that way. As I said, I tried to watch half of The Birdcage last night, but Netflix stuffed up. So
Netflix shit the bed.
It really did. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
This is not how you're supposed to work, Netflix.
Exactly.
You had one job!
You had one job, Netflix! So hopefully I'll get to finish the other half. During the week, because I haven't been very well, I haven't really been able to watch a lot of stuff that I really need to concentrate on. So I've done a few rewatches. And as I've read The Wolf of Wall Street and I'm reading the second book, Catching the Wolf of Wall Street, I just wanted to rewatch the movie. So I had a great time rewatching the movie, and I could seriously just watch that movie like every day for a week and not get sick of it. It's just that good, and I really have to, like, commend Terrence Winter, Martin Scorsese, and Leonardo DiCaprio for somehow putting a movie together from those two books that are insanely crazy. They're all over the place. Who the hell knows what's true or not? But when you're reading the book, and it's strangely addictive, even though you hate the shit out of Jordan Belfort, they somehow managed to make, like, a really fantastic movie from them. So that was a fun rewatch. And I had to go buy Goodfellas on Blu-ray because I got rid of my DVD thinking I'm going to go buy the Blu-ray, which I never did, and then I wanted to watch it, so I had to go out and buy the Blu-ray. But again, that's a movie I can just watch all the freaking time. It's so good. It's always great to rewatch it. And I have to say, my favorite scene in Goodfellas, and this was one that they kind of improvised, is where they go to, like, Joe Pesci's house, and his mother, who's Ashley Martin Scorsese's mother in the movie, she's woken up and she feeds them the pasta, and then she's showing them really crap artwork. It's just one of them. It's like the best scene in the movie. It just works so well. And there's a really good chemistry between Mother Scorsese and Joe Pesci. It just works. I don't know how, but it does. And it's just, I love watching that movie. And I rewatched Captain America, The Winter Soldier, and it's just a bloody awesome movie. One of the best of the year. Without a doubt.
They should find a way to combine all those three movies together as one film. That'd be Captain America going up against the Goodfellas.
And Jordan Belfort.
Exactly.
So yeah, that was a good, you know, rewatch. I rewatched Iron Man 3 because, you know what, I needed to watch a movie where a superhero was suffering, like, anxiety issues and having panic attacks, because I can relate to that. Not the superhero part, but I can sometimes be a superhero. But, you know, the other stuff. It's refreshing that a superhero has these kind of problems. What else did I watch?
And can I say in part for Iron Man 3, screw the haters of that movie.
That movie's fucking awesome. Yeah.
It is, and I honestly, like, I could rant for days, like, how that movie is awesome and everyone else who hates it is wrong, but, you know, I'm not going to go into that right now, but it's an awesome movie, and definitely check it out.
I'm trying to remember, like, stuff I've been watching. I just got no memory. On Netflix, when it works, I've been watching the TV show Psych, which I think finished this year, but I've been watching the seasons. I think I'm at season 4, and actually the next episode that I'll be watching actually guest stars John Cena. And it's an entertaining show. I absolutely love it. I wish I had watched it like when it first started. But I'm glad I can catch up with it now. I have so much to catch up on, but when you're really like fatigued and you're just unwell and you can't concentrate, you can't go in and be like, I'm going to watch season 2 of Hannibal and get it done, or I'm going to catch up on Game of Thrones. It doesn't work that way. And yeah, that could be it. I don't know if I've seen any more. I do want to mention, I did watch, for wrestling, the new Blu-ray called Ladies and Gentlemen, My Name is Paul Heyman. That's what it's called. My name is not actually Paul Heyman. If it was, I would be like a 49-year-old Jewish man.
I'm very disappointed, Marcy, that your name isn't Paul Heyman.
I wish it was sometimes, because I love Paul Heyman. He's just one of the most incredible figures in professional wrestling, or that professional wrestling has ever seen. The 2-hour documentary, it's just not enough. I need more. He's such a charismatic and just intriguing guy. And there's just so much that could be said about him. But it's a 2 hours worth watching, and I'll get to the extras because there's like another 8 hours or something on there of just bonus stuff. But yeah, I may mention it more on the Super Squared Circle podcast when me and those guys get around to it. But yeah, if you're a wrestling fan, freaking watch it, bitches.
I will, God.
Bead face.
Yes, Marcy face.
All right, what have you been watching? And you've been at MIFF, so maybe just give us some of the better ones.
Jeez, I've seen so many movies lately, Marcy. I've seen so many movies in the past 2 weeks that it actually literally made me come down with the flu.
Yeah, you're in my shoes for once.
I know, it's weird. But I was really sick as a dog for a few days, but I was able to still be able to check out a lot of the big movies at MIFF, at least the ones I wanted to see. Definitely the one that I think my favorite of the festival, it's interesting, is that this is actually wasn't one of any of the newer films. It was an older film, and that was William Friedkin's 1977 film Sorcerer.
Mm-hmm. I really need to see this.
Which is an absolutely fantastic film, and I was like gobsmacked throughout the entire film. I couldn't believe that a film like this was actually made. Like, there's a scene that involves a giant truck going over a suspension bridge, which is probably one of the most intense things I have ever seen in my entire life.
And he, followed you on Twitter after that or something?
Indeed. William Friedkin, sent me a nice message, and then he decided to follow me on Twitter, which is actually...
fucking bastard!
Which was unexpected, and afterwards I didn't do this, but I wanted to go celebrate by eating KFC Killer Joe style.
Did you invite Gina Gershon?
Indeed. Okay, that was wrong. But anyway,
This podcast is wrong.
Well, the cow has bolted from the paddock, babe. The cow has bolted.
Other highlights, I saw Boyhood, which is Richard Linklater's latest film. And it's a film that he's made for over 12 years now, and he sort of made it like it follows the lives of this young boy and his family over the course of 12 years. And he actually shot it like once a year, every year for 12 years. So you actually see this young boy grow up into a man. And as well as you see, Ethan Hawke and, Patricia Arquette play his parents, and you see how they're not only how they look over the course of 12 years, but also how their characters change as well. It's a great film, a fantastic film. It's definitely one of the year's best and deserves all the critical attention that it has received.
It's bizarre because I had no idea he was filming this until the movie first had a trailer.
Yeah, well, he sort of kept... he was shooting it secretly for 12 years, and it was only in the past probably maybe 2-3 years that he actually finally talked about that he was actually making it.
Yeah, that sounds like kind of something like Stanley Kubrick would have done.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, a great film, and it's a film that resonated. Like, even though my life and the character's life in the film are different, but there were a lot of things about it that rang very true to me as well. And it's just a great film, and I highly recommend everyone to check out. And I saw two docos, and these were, in my opinion, the best docos I saw at the festival. One was I Am Big Bird, the Carol Spini story.
Are you Big Bird, Bede?
I wish I was, Bird. But... I wish I was, but I'm unfortunately, not that funny, I'm more Oscar the Grouch than
you do live in a trash can.
I do, and I'm all green. But anyways,
great, I snorted.
And there's a bit of Cookie Monster in there too.
Cookies.
Anyways, the doco is about Carol Spini, who, of course, is the man behind Big Bird, and as well he does the puppeteering for Oscar the Grouch as well. And it's sort of it's a loving tribute to him, and it's basically sort of covers every aspect of his life, like how he sort of got involved with Jim Henson to working on Sesame Street, and also his sort of a troubled childhood and also his family, his friends. And I'm not going to lie, during the course of this movie, I've never heard so many sniffles from an audience in my entire life. Like, literally everyone was either sniffing or crying while watching this movie. And I will admit I was very misty-eyed while I was watching it too. And it's just a beautifully made doco. It's hilarious. It's funny. Very insightful. And it just gives me a better appreciation of Carol Spini, like it, and how he sort of was able to bring this character who has become so iconic in our childhoods, and not only in our childhoods, but also in pop culture in general, you know, and how Big Bird was pretty much like probably the biggest star of the 80s. And it's a great doco, and it's highly recommend everyone to check out.
I think that's like figuratively. And literally, because Big Bird is fucking huge.
He is.
He's a big fucking bird.
And Carol Spini is 80 years old, and he's still playing Big Bird.
How the hell does one do that?
Well, he actually has a standby, like if he ever retires, his standby can, take over for him.
I'm not even 30 yet, and I can barely walk on some days, and this guy's 80 and still playing Big Bird.
Exactly.
I feel ashamed of my life right now.
But it's a brilliant doco, and I highly recommend everyone that check it. I think it's just only doing the festival circuit at the moment, but hopefully at some point it will get
released. Yeah, it'd be good to see.
But I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. And, of course... the other film doco I saw is Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films, which, of course, is the third and final doco in Mark Hartley's trilogy that looks at different exploitation films. The first, of course, was Not Quite Hollywood. The third was Machete Maidens Unleashed. And Electric Boogaloo sort of follows the 15 years of how Canon Films during the 80s, and they sort of produced many films like the Death Wish
films that we absolutely love and adore. And if it weren't for those movies, we wouldn't be the sick psychos we are today.
Exactly. Like, also, like, Chuck Norris films, the American Ninja films, and also, like, their most infamous films, like Masters of the Universe, which we all love, and
Superman 4, which is better than Superman 3. Shut up, everyone. It's true.
They didn't produce Superman 3, but...
No, I'm just saying, Superman 4 is better than Superman 3. And I said, shut up to anybody that disagrees.
No, I agree. I'm just sort of clarifying it to our audience.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, you know, it might be a canon film. It might be universally hated. It's still better than Part 3. And that's a fact. That's not opinion.
Yes. All right. and a bunch of other stuff as well. And it sort of shows, like, it's like... Mahayim Glovis, I think is probably best his last name up, who recently passed away as well. Yeah, so it was kind of bittersweet after watching that film and then finding out about that. But it sort of shows like him and his cousin, who were the main guys behind Canon Films, they sort of have a huge love for cinema. They loved every aspect of it. But they were completely insane as well.
I think you need to be to be doing that kind of thing.
Exactly, and it's what's great about the doco is like it's a loving tribute to them, and also like even though they made so many insane movies,
Ninja
and
3, a lot of the Domination,
crappy movies, but they also did give chances to legitimate filmmakers to make like projects without studio interference. There's one point where Franco Zeffirelli. The legendary director, he made a film with them, and he even said at one point that they were probably the best producers that he has ever worked with. And the film he made with them was probably his Otello, which was, I think, an opera version of Othello. It was like he says it's his best film, and the fact that he got to make it with them was the icing on the cake. And there's also other ones like John Cassavetes, John Frankenheimer, and even Australia's Fred Skepsi made films with them and critical acclaim films.
Did they actually speak about like Toby Hooper having a picture deal and stuff there?
Yeah, they talk about Toby Hooper's free picture deal with Life Force, which is just insane if you've never seen that movie.
Yeah.
And of course, Invaders from Mars and also the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which they were thought, because I think when that movie came out, that Canon Films were on the decline and they were hoping that would be their next big hit, but when they actually saw it, they didn't realize that Toby Hooper didn't make a horror film, he made a comedy.
Yeah.
And they knew that it was going to bomb big time.
And they made Ninja 3 Domination, I mentioned that before.
Yes. Just saying. And they brought it up in the doco and I was really happy about that. And of course they brought up The Forbidden Dance.
That's my favorite. Let's Lombardo dance the same the rainforest. It should become a thing. Forget the ice bucket thing and that. I mean, donate to ALS. I did that today. It's a heartbreaking thing for people to suffer from. So go and donate to the charities. You go to ALSA.org. That's where I donated, just saying. But I think we need to start the trend. Do a Lombardo dance to save the rainforest and get people to donate to save the rainforest.
I'm totally doing the Lombardo dance right now, Marcy.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to post my Lombardo dancing video. And everyone better save the rainforest. God damn it.
And Sid Haig is going to be my teacher.
He's going to be my witch doctor.
Exactly.
But, and some random 80s dude is going to be my dance partner and boyfriend.
Yes, but Electric Boogaloo, if you love the other, like, not quite Hollywood, Machete Maidens Unleashed.
What's a Machete Maiden?
Sorry, Machete Maidens Unleashed. Like a tongue twister having all these titles. So Electric Boogaloo is awesome. If you love those ones, you'll definitely love this one. And I think it might be coming out sooner because I think it does have a DVD or release date on Halloween. Here in Australia, so
birthday present alert.
Indeed.
Just saying, and, my birthday is just before Halloween.
Exactly, and after watching this doco, I really want to watch Mahia Golan's film The Apple, because that looks utterly insane.
I want to rewatch The Forbidden Dance.
We should do a commentary for it.
Yes.
But, yeah, there's a bunch of other stuff I saw from MIFF as well, but you can check out my video reviews from all of those on the site.
And B has been strangely silent, so she can talk to us now.
But what do you mean strangely silent?
I haven't heard anything from you. I've just been teasing
She was captivated by what I was saying.
No, she just enjoyed my teasing.
Well, actually, I was making a cup of tea, but anyway. I'm joking. I have nothing quite as amazing as Beat has revealed, but I can't really say much at present because I'm working on something in particular that I'm currently not at liberty of discussing. But in terms of the films I've seen, two of them have been what Marcy has sent me. The Doomsday Book, which is a South Korean science fiction slash kind of a drama that deals with the end of the world as well as and AI and
one technology. Of the directors is one of my favourites of all time.
Oh, but of course.
Might just
and,
add that.
And the other one is Peter, and that too was made in Korea, and that deals with a loan shark and his road to redemption. Both of them have been fantastic, and I will definitely see if I can find a way to review them. I have also got in touch with my inner little girl by watching the Sailor Moon Crystal series.
If
there are any anime film or anime fans out there who love the Sailor Moon Crystal, is beautiful. It's fantastic. So if you haven't checked it out yet, shame on you. Give it a look. It is wonderful. So yeah, that's basically all I've got to report. So yes. That's me.
Yeah, Bede has been the one watching everything. We haven't really. Well, I can mention I did read both books of Greg Sestero, The Disaster Artist, and I'm really convinced Tommy Wiseau is an alien. There is no way he's an actual person. I really, I cannot highly recommend this book enough. Everyone has to read it. It is so bizarre. It will terrify you in some parts. You will laugh. You will cry. Just read it and then watch The Room and just be shocked again. And I also read Choreography, the biography of Corey Feldman that he wrote, and it is a very, very emotional book. I found myself crying while I was reading it. I got a lot of interesting insight into Corey that I, you know, never really knew about him. He talks about the passing of Corey Haim. He talks about his very abusive upbringing. He talks about, you know, sexual abuse in Hollywood, which is very, it's confronting, it's very disturbing, it's very sad. And, you know, one of the biggest highlights was hearing about his, or rather reading about his friendship with Michael Jackson, which as he got older, they unfortunately had a very strange falling out, but there's a really sweet story in there that he tells. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting read. I would recommend it highly. He doesn't really hold anything back, and that's pretty much what he told us. That would be Bede and I when we met him at Armageddon last year. So yeah, just two book recommendations, and I think that's a wrap from us.
Indeed.
Yes, indeed. Let me see if I can get this out without making a mistake. You can find us at supermarcy.com. You can follow me on Twitter if you want to stalk me, because don't actually really stalk me because I'll call the cops and you'll go to jail. at twitter.com/supermarcy. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/sm.com/superpodcast. You can email me at marcy@supermarcy.com. You can send hate mail to Bede at his email address. I don't know where else I am, but that's where you'll find me. You can look us up on iTunes. We should be there somewhere. Type in Super Podcast or Super Marcy. We'll be there. And I probably should add that, and I'm really, I don't know, I think I'm a little bit embarrassed about this as well, but I'm going to be in a TV pilot for 42 Geek Street on their first show on Channel 31 in Melbourne, and I'll be talking about my doll collection. So I'm not sure when it's on, but you can look it up and you can see me embarrass the hell out of myself as I show off my dolls like any normal 39-year-old woman would. So there's a shout out to those guys, and, you know, thanks for them to coming and film my doll collection and putting me on their show. Hopefully their ratings don't tank on the first episode because of me. All right.
That'll happen when I come onto their show.
Yeah, as soon as they, like, Bede's going to be on it, he's going to show his DVD collection, tank, go the ratings.
Yeah, when they see some of the most embarrassing movies in my collection, then, yeah, it's going to
be like, why do you own Bolero?
No, I think there's some worse ones than Bolero.
I don't know, that's the first one that came to mind. I don't know why. You
had to bring that up, because that movie makes me angry.
Maybe that's why I brought it up.
But, yes.
Bede, where can people find you? And it's, I mean, they can find you being terrible, but, you know, other than that.
Well, they can find me living in the trash can and being green on a regular basis. But they can also find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Bejamine or my Facebook page at facebook.com/Bejamine. Or my fan page at facebook.com/theterribleaustralian.
Because you fucking are.
Indeed. Sorry. Somebody has to be.
It's getting into me tonight. I'm like drunk on sickness or something.
You're drunk on hate towards me.
I usually am.
But you can find my weekly writing for supermarcy.com with both my new song of the week. And also you can check out my video reviews, and there'll be a bunch of them popping up on the website for the next few days, and a bunch of other recent articles and reviews I've written on there.
And
as well.
B, where can people find you?
You can find me on Facebook, Facebook/ThePinkPandas. That's my own sort of unique web address, or just under B Harper. I've got a very sort of distinctive, halfway attractive face, so I'm pretty sure you'll be able to find me quite easily.
You'll see this sexy lady and you'll know it's me. Sorry. Okay.
I'm currently also on Twitter under DaBoomCat. That is DA_BoomCat with a K. I currently have writing G's at supermarcy.com, obviously.
Yes.
VentureAmigos.net. Morehorror.com.
With and, me, and I should write there.
Upcoming blog that will be making itself quite visible in the near future. So yes, that is me.
She's busy, and I should give a shout out to More Horror and say, I love you, Seth, and I will come back to writing reviews. Yeah, you know why, Seth? But I love you. You're like my favorite. Well, I have many favorites, but he's one of them. He knows that. Yeah, unfortunately I can't do anything ever. I should also give a shout out to Monster Pictures. Go to monsterpictures.com, and when I'm actually well enough, I am the monster's eye, and I actually turn into an eye of a monster when it happens. And I try to bring, you know, our monster fan base, news, and things happening, in the movie world and in the horror world. And yeah, you can also go check out Monsters Library of Movies. They are going to be bringing out some really good stuff. And they had a movie playing at MIFF, The Search for Wang Wang, which is a really great documentary. So definitely keep an eye out for that as well. That's a wrap.
I agree.
We're freaking awesome except Bede. He's only half awesome. Hopefully we'll be back soon. And I'm thinking we should come back and talk about Ninja Turtles because, you know, the new movie doesn't come out here for another, like, 3 weeks or something stupid. But that'd be as good a time as any to revisit, like, the old movies, the cartoons, and my childhood because I grew up with Ninja Turtles and I've now introduced my niece Lily to Ninja Turtles and she's obsessed. They're, like, her new invisible friends. So when we're, like, she wants to play something, she, you know, will say, oh, look, Michelangelo's gone off to find another party because he's a party dude. And her favourite's Raph. And she's always, like, playing with Raph. It's just the cutest thing. And I couldn't be prouder of my niece for loving the Ninja Turtles. Best ever. So hopefully we can come back and do that podcast. I will shut up and let everyone go.
Well, to be fair, Marcia, I always thought that biker mice from Mars were better than the Turtles, but, you know, that's just me.
Because you're an idiot.
I kid. I only just wanted to make you angry.
And that's why I say all these things.
Exactly. Well, that's a wrap. Hopefully we'll be back soon. Take it easy, everybody. And if you're ever feeling, you know, down and upset, or if something's really bothering you and you need help, please, you know, just even try reach out to a friend, a family member, or, you know, if you're within Australia, check out Beyond Blue because they are a fantastic organisation and they are there to listen and help. And I do encourage people to donate to them as well. So with that said, that's a wrap. Until next time, I've been pretty crazy. Bede, as usual, has been terrible. And Bee has just been lovely and making herself some tea. So catch you later, everybody.
Au revoir.
See you, everyone.